Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
I almost want to sing along, but I won't subject you to that. Of course, it is Simon and Garfunkel's America. We've got some 4th of July themed music for you, at least in this hour. And it's my pleasure to welcome on one of my favorite people in the world, Amy Simon. She is the host of and writer and performer and producer of the longest running one woman show in Los Angeles. It's called Cheerios in My Underwear. And you can read all about it at CheeriosInMyUnderwear.com. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, sweetie. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You're steering clear of all the Michael Jackson coverage in L.A.?
No.
It's everywhere,
It's impossible.
And it's getting better. You know, I hear that Tuesday the Staples Center is going to be is going to host the memorial.
Yep.
And but I love this part. This is my favorite part of it. Fans who wish to attend will pay $25 to sit in the stands. Family, friends, and VIPs will have seats on the floor, but the general public will have to pay $25 to attend.
Oh, I think there's this big controversy about who pays for events like that in L.A. And besides, we're so broke, the whole state is, you know, on IOU.
I know.
So I guess they're just trying to rake in the dough any way they can.
But I don't think this money is going to go to the state. I think this money is going to go to the Jackson family. And apparently the taxpayers in L.A. might have to pay for some of, you know, the security and everything.
Right. That's what I was saying, that there's a big issue about that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I can just imagine what it's going to do to the parking traffic situation on Tuesday. I wanted to mention that I also do this show called Motherhood Unplugged, which is my little radio show where moms tell the real deal on motherhood, and I'm doing that Tuesday afternoon, and of course wondering, oh, that's going to be fun trying to cross.
Oh no. And you do that on KPFK?
KPFK Pacifica Performance Showcase on Pacifica Radio. Yep.
Awesome. All right. Well, we are not here to talk about Michael Jackson, and but I, of course, you know, I just had to had to run it by you. You know, as if there's not enough coverage, they preempted Rachel Maddow's show tonight on MSNBC for Inside Neverland.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, that's not what we're talking about. It's the 4th of July on Saturday. And all we hear about when we talk about the birth of this nation and the signers of the Declaration of Independence, who of course were all men, all we hear about are the founding fathers. But there were founding mothers. And I know you've been doing your homework on this subject.
Yep.
So I figured, who better to get a different perspective on the 4th of July and how this country was founded than my friend Amy Simon?
That's right. Absolutely. So I had so much fun. I love when you call me and say, what do you want to do? Because then I just immerse myself in women's stories and I get all inspired and angry again because of stuff. But I, just for fun, I Googled founding mothers of America.
Okay.
It's always fun to do that. And, you know, Cokie Roberts, who's fantastic, she wrote a book a couple years ago called Daughters of Liberty, which is, that's what you went, when you do founding mothers, that was one of the first things that came up.
I have that book.
Ah, yeah.
I need
and
to give it to
you. And it's about the women behind the men who were presidents.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is great. And, you know, I could talk the whole show about the women behind the men that we don't know anything about and all their accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those are names that are familiar, at least somewhat familiar to people. And I go after the gals that we never heard of that did all this awesome stuff.
Okay. So,
you know.
All right. We've got about 2.5 minutes before our first break.
Okay.
So tell us, who's the first one you want to tell us about?
Well, it would have to be Anne Hutchinson in the 1600s, because she's probably known as, like, one of the first feminists, aside from Mary Wollstonecraft. But she's kind of responsible for the whole religious freedom, you know, freedom to talk about religion, because she had the nerve, the gall, to try to preach to women, just women. And, you know, they sent her off to, like, Maine or Rhode Island. She was banished. Obviously, we hopefully should know that she was involved in the biggest trial of the century in the 1700s because she had the nerve to preach to women. And she, people say she's responsible for the First Amendment.
Wow.
She had this unbelievable trial where the governor said, we do not mean to discourse with those of your sex. And she was like, well, what laws have I broken? I mean, those are exactly what was said. But basically, she it split the country, as a lot of the women's issues had split the country, even up till today, where people think women, you know, should be home or shouldn't be in public life.
They should be barefoot and pregnant, right?
Yeah, she was one of the first. And then we had Abigail Adams, who we have heard quite a bit about. And luckily, we have so much great info from her because she wrote all these letters to her hubby, John Adams. She wrote 2,000 letters, and they're preserved. And a lot of the women I'm going to talk about later, it's hard to find, you know, information. They're diaries, they're this and they're that. But, I mean, you look at Abigail Adams, who basically said, when he was off with the Continental Congress drafting the Declaration, she said, and this is famous, you know, famous letter, remember the ladies and be more generous to and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. All men would be tyrants, on and on. And they had this wonderful relationship and this debate going on. But I'm thinking, she's sleeping with the guy that can change the laws and nothing. Zip. Still nothing. Zip.
Still nothing.
Still nothing. You know, and I'm thinking, like, a vault. They must
and,
have known.
And if you can't,
was.
You know, and if you, the power of the, you know, that says it all. All right, Amy Simon, we got to take a break here. So we'll do that. Come back and hear more about Abigail Adams and the women, the founding mothers of our nation as we get ready to celebrate Independence Day. It is Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com along with Amy Simon. We'll be right back on Air America.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Nicole Sandler.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
We are celebrating the 4th of July coming up on Saturday, and I thought we'd take a different look at the founding of this nation. We hear so much about the founding fathers, but not a whole lot about the founding mothers. And we know how important women are and must have been even back when this country was just being born. So joining us is my friend Amy Simon, who just loves women. She actually, you know, in her personal life likes men, but she's got this thing about women, and she's been researching our foremothers. Can I say that? Our foremothers rather than forefathers?
You can say foremothers. Elizabeth Cady Stanton liked to be referred to as a foresister.
Our four
sisters. You can call them what you want.
Okay.
So we have freedom of speech now, thankfully.
That's right. Thanks to Anne Hutchinson, right?
Well, kind of, yeah.
Okay. All right, who are you going to tell us about next? I love this because I always get educated about the women who, you know, when you're in school and you study American history, we don't learn about these women.
I know. It's very wrong. Don't get me started. Because, you know, we're getting there. We're getting better. As our generation of women get into better positions of power, we can do more about it. But, yes, there's a definite void. But, yeah, when I started to read about it, I was like, what? I never heard of these people. Like, I think I mentioned this on your last show. In the Deborah Sampson, who was before Yentl. That's how I refer to her. Before Yentl, there was Deborah Sampson, who she impersonated a man, and her name was Robert Shirtless. I don't know if she means shirtless, but shirtless in the Revolutionary War. She fought. She walked from Boston to I don't know how far to enlist, and she pretended to be a man for a long time. And then when she got wounded, they discovered that she was a woman. And she ended up being honored for it. And she was one of the first women to receive a veteran's pension. And then she went and spoke publicly about her military experience. But, yeah, she... You know, most women didn't do that, and there's probably a million other stories like that that
we
never
heard
of. Well,
you know, there's a Disney movie, Mulan.
Oh.
It's Mulan. Why didn't they do Deborah? You know, they did
Mulan. Is that what Mulan's about?
Yes.
Oh, we must have
Chinese woman who dressed as a man to go fight in the war.
See? I love that. There are no original stories. And you can't make up the good stuff anyway. So somebody did some research. Yay.
But why did they have to do it about the, you know, why didn't they make it an American female hero?
Ah, good question. Why doesn't Madonna and Angelina adopt American babies? Oh, no, I just went off on a complete crazy tangent there. But there were lots of other women that fought for their husbands. like Margaret Corbin. She's one that I found that I was interested in, and he got wounded, so she took over for him, and she was the first woman to receive a military pension. And then there's a woman that I think we've heard of. I know her name was familiar to me, Molly Pitcher, and her real name was Mary McCauley, but they called her Molly Pitcher because she carried pitchers of water to the troops.
And wow. She, no, and I never heard of her.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
we knew of...
a little familiar to me, but...
No, I knew of Clara Barton. I mean, those are the women we heard of who were the
right.
nurses, you know?
Yeah,
the women who were in traditional female roles.
Right. Right. Well, and also, interestingly enough, some women also got written out of the history books because they were so controversial or because their families were ashamed that they were so controversial and reformist, like Elizabeth Cady Stanton. I'm really getting into her life right now. She was born very privileged. Her father was a judge, and her mom was a real independent woman, but she had 11 children, and all the sons died. And Elizabeth was right in the middle of it, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Her father was Judge Cady, very renowned. He was on the Supreme Court Associate Justice and a very, very, very well-known family. And when all the men died, he was just so grief-stricken. And even though she was one of the smartest of the kids, and she taught herself, you know, Greek and Latin and brilliant, he just said, oh, I just wish you were a boy. And she was about 10 or 11 years old when that happened. And she says, and it's written in any of the biographies about her, this was a real seminal moment for her and shaped her and inspired her to do what men can do. And no matter how hard she tried, she never got her father's approval. Here we go, Freud all over the place and psychology. But these are the things that shape our lives and form our characters, I think. And thank goodness for us, because Elizabeth Cady Stanton, she ended up writing the Woman's Bible, and she was so outspoken.
Wait a minute,
and
the Woman's Bible?
Yes, it's called the Women's History Bible. I'm sorry if I don't have the exact name, but yeah, she spent the last part of her life working with that with Susan B. Anthony. And Susan B., they were like partners in crime. And Susan B. Anthony got most of the credit because Elizabeth Cady Stanton was just too outspoken, even for the women. And she and Susan B. Anthony they kind of split the whole women's movement because they didn't want when the 14th and 15th Amendment came along, it was giving suffrage just to the Negroes, and Susan B. and Elizabeth Cady Stanton were like, hey, we want to get our voting rights too, and the other women said, well, no, let's because the abolition movement and the women's movement were like hand in hand. They were so together, and it ended up splitting them up. And she never gave in. She said, nope. I want women's to be included in suffrage. And they said, well, wait for the Negro. And she said, no. And they said, well, we want it. And they had a big cat fight. And, you know, 45 years later, Julia Ward Howe came in and brought it back together. But Elizabeth Cady Stanton was not a man, obviously, and she could never, ever get her father's approval. And she would talk about she wanted divorce reform, she wanted family reform, education, all the things that all the women that founded our country from the very beginning, from Mary Wollstonecraft right through to, you know, Lily Ledbetter this last January.
Mm-hmm.
Equal pay, equal opportunity, just, you know, your basic equal rights. It's the same thing that Prop 8's about. All these things are all about the same stuff, just basically about equal rights. But women were just absolutely vilified for it. I mean, even the labor laws, the reason we even have unions is because all the women went on strike. I mean, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory in the early 1900s and the Lowell, Massachusetts, the textile mills, all that came from women. Women learned to organize, and all this organization came out of first a religious organization. And then temperance was another one. Temperance and abolition were the two movements that really the women's movement got their guidance from and grew up with.
Hmm.
So it was really, really interesting. But what they all went out on a big limb. I mean, for instance, Belva Lockwood, who I don't know if you're familiar with her name.
Well, from you, Belva Lockwood, right?
Belva Lockwood. She was the second woman to run for president. Victoria Woodhull was the first. I'm afraid to talk about Victoria Woodhull because, you know, I get excited and I can't stop.
Well, Victoria Woodhull, I mean, I think you need to do a screenplay about Victoria Woodhull because her story is amazing.
And her also, her life, Victoria Woodhull, for everyone out there, was the first woman to run for president in 1872. And she was, no one's ever heard of her because she was so controversial that even Elizabeth Cady Stanton wrote her out of the book. And then Elizabeth was written out. But she believed it. She didn't just believe in free love, Victoria Woodhull. She practiced it. She absolutely did not believe that marriage would work. She called it slavery.
Wow. Well, because also back then, I think the men did treat their women as, you know, as possessions.
Of course. The women had no rights. They couldn't own property. I mean, stories that I read about women who inherited stuff from their own families, and then they got married, and their husbands were drunk and abusive, and they still, the husbands got the property. Women, you know, women were just treated like chattel. I mean, that's well known. That's legal fact, and it was nothing until 1848 when the first Women's Property Act was, well, the Married Women's Property Act was passed, and that took forever to get that passed. And what I'm always struck with whenever I do all my research, and especially on a day like today when I just buried myself in it, well, there were so many battles, big and little battles, for years and years and years. First, they couldn't get education, like Belva Lockwood, back to her. When she was the second woman to run for president, she couldn't get accepted into college. Colleges wouldn't accept women because they were distracting to men, and they didn't think women had, they literally didn't think women's brains were big enough. Literally, Nicole, they had medical drawings of women's brains that were smaller than men's. But, you know, that's the mentality. I mean, they said that Negroes were, what, three-fifths of a person back then as well? So there was just so much misinformation. But Belva Lockwood, she fought like a maniac just to get into law school. She finally gets into law school. She does her whole program. She graduates, but they're not going to give her a law degree. So she has to fight like the Dickens to get her law degree. Then she gets the first big case in front of the Supreme Court. They say, no, you know what? You and your ovaries are not welcome here. You can't. And she fought and fought and fought, and finally she got to, she was the first woman, and she's mostly known for this, to practice in front of the Supreme Court. A year later, a young black lawyer, Samuel Lowry, also was told, you know, step away from the Supreme Court. You cannot practice. She fought for him. She opened that door.
Wow.
Another battle. She was the first woman to get equal pay in government for women. So just lots and lots of battles, constant, just going at it, just never letting up.
You know, and the thing is, Amy, you talk about that, you know, she was the first woman to get equal pay in government, but here in the private sector, I think women make 73 cents on the dollar.
78 cents on the dollar. And in 1983, Chief Justice Roberts, he wasn't Chief Justice then, he's like, what gender gap? I don't know what the heck you're talking about. That was in 1983. Yeah. We still only make 78 cents to the dollar.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
But we've come a long way, baby.
We've come a long way, baby. Well, you know, if you look back, we have come a long way compared to the 17 and the 1800s, absolutely. I mean, Victoria Woodhull's got to be, I thought, all last year, I thought, oh, is she looking down at Hillary and Barack? And, yeah, I mean, it's all how you look at it. In some ways, we've come incredibly far, and in some ways, not far enough at all. The divorce laws, the custody laws, the cycle of poverty that divorced mothers in America live with because of the way things are set up, and child care. This is all the same stuff that they were fighting for, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and especially Victoria Woodhull, who had such a fascinating life, and she traveled around the country because in the middle of the 1800s, there was the Second Great Awakening, and it was all this gigantic religious fervor, ecstasy movement where there were spiritual guides, and she was a medium. And so she traveled around the country, and what she wrote was that what really got to her was hearing the stories of women who were basically domestic slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And they had no choices, no options. They had to stay with their husbands, like Julia Ward Howe, in the 1800s, most people know her because she wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic, Mine Eyes Have Seen the Glory, that one, which was a poem. She was invited to a slave camp an army camp by President Lincoln, and so she was inspired and wrote that. And she was married to a man who didn't believe women should have a public life whatsoever. And in her diary, this is one of my favorite quotes, she wrote, "My husband approves of none of the activities which I find enjoyable." But she had to stay with him because if she divorced him, she would have lost her children. Boom. Just like that.
Really?
That was the legal standard. All the women. That's why they fought so hard, still fighting for, you know, equal, fair divorce and custody laws. But, yeah, so in that respect, we have come a long way. But that took one battle after another forever, years and years and years and years.
Wow. Okay, Amy Simon is with us. Her day job is this show she does in L.A., Cheerios in My Underwear. But she's been you've been at this for about a year, haven't you? Like working, studying up.
It's actually been more than a year. It's been a couple. It's ever since I got divorced. And I said, wait a minute.
That's right. You know what? Well, listen, we got to take a break. We'll come back on the other side and talk about what got you interested in finding out about our four sisters. Okay. It is it is our salute to the 4th of July, talking about the founding mothers of this country. If you want to chime in, you're welcome to. The number is 866-303-2270. I'm Nicole Sandler. Be right back with Amy Simon on Air America Radio.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Give us a call.
Sunshine, blue skies, please go away.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
And we are celebrating the 4th of July. That is, you know, it's coming on Saturday. In a different way, probably in a way that nobody else is going to be talking about it, from the woman's point of view. Yes, because all we hear about are the founding fathers, and I thought I'd call on my friend Amy Simon, who's sort of obsessed with the topic, to talk about the founding mothers. And as we were saying before the break, Amy, you sort of got interested in this after your divorce, when you realized how few rights you had, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got a taste of it when I was researching Cheerios in my underwear, and I happened across a book called The Mask of Motherhood by Susan Mashart, a lot of statistics about the job of mothering, and then I found Ann Crittenden's book, which I call my Bible, The Price of Motherhood, Why the Most Important Job is Still the Least Valued. So I started to simmer a little bit with that, but it wasn't until, because I wasn't dealing with any kind of economic backlash to being a stay-at-home mom. I was fine with it, you know, and I didn't worry about money because I was a stay-at-home mom. My husband worked, and we had a deal set up, and I knew that I was doing the most important work I'd ever done in my whole life, having come out of the music business for 20 years.
Right.
But yes, when I got divorced, I was just shocked at, and not just at my situation at all, just when I realized that the laws, the custody laws, the support laws, and more than that, the lawyers, the family legal system is unbelievable. There's no standard. Judges have unbelievable amount of leeway, and they bring, you know, there was all this talk about Sotomayor because she brought her own personal history into her decision-making process, which we can't help. We're human beings. But in the case for women getting divorced, you just never know. It is such a crapshoot. Your mm-hmm. life is in someone else's hands.
That's right. It depends on which judge you get.
Right. Yep. Right. So, you know, if you have a judge whose wife or husband cheated on them and there's adultery in the picture, they'll put their stamp on that and judge based on it. So, yeah, I was just shocked at how helpless I was and how little control I had over the situation and how ridiculous all these laws were. So, yeah, I just ended up in the library for a long time, and one thing led to another. So, yeah, that's what led me down the path. I mean, Belva Lockwood, we were talking about her before. She never, I don't think when she was a little girl, she said, when I grow up, I want to practice in front of the Supreme Court. What happened to her was she was a teacher, and her husband died and left her to try to take care of her child. And she learned really fast that she couldn't provide. She sent her kid to live with her mother for 3 years while she went to law school. And, you know, I'm dealing with that now. I'm thinking about going back to school, and I'm raising two daughters. And how do you work full-time, go to school full-time, and raise children? So I feel very close to Belva Lockwood in that mm-hmm. respect, because she did what she had to do. And the women back then, they all did what they had to do, lots and lots of sacrifice. But to provide, to be, you know, the economic disparity is just insane. Even today, the laws are, the statistics, there's a wonderful organization called MomsRising.org. If anybody ever wants to pop on their website, the statistics will blow you away, and the stories around this country about what women go through just trying to have economic equality, just, that's what gets me going, and that's what mm-hmm. keeps me reading, and I'm going to write a great show about it because it's crazy.
I know, and I have no doubt, having seen Cheerios in my underwear a couple of times, I'm sure you'll bring a great sense of humor, but inform us at the same time, which is what you do every time I talk to you, because since you've gotten on this kick about the founding mothers, I swear I learned so much from you each time we talk.
Yeah. I learn so much, too, all the time. I mean, really, it's like a domino. You read about one woman, and it leads to another. Like right now, I'm reading all about Frances Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, and she was this Scottish heiress whose father was a big Thomas Paine fan. Now, Thomas Paine was in England back in the, you know, early 1700s.
Right.
He influenced our entire government. And her father was such a fan of his that he reprinted, I'm trying to remember which one of his books, but he personally, her father, paid so that poor people could read Thomas Paine's work. And Thomas Paine was a gigantic women's rights advocate. So Frances Wright was a person who grew up, thankfully, as Lucretia Mott, who was another Quaker, grew up with a Quaker father who encouraged education. I mean, it was so much about education. So Frances Wright grew up in a very freewheeling, intellectually stimulating environment where she never felt that because she was a woman, she was limited until she got out into the world. So she came over to America and she was the first woman in America to speak publicly to men and women. And boy, she got hell for it. But she was like Victoria Woodhull. She came before Victoria Woodhull, but she also believed in free love. She was a little nutty.
I love hearing about all this free love stuff from these women back in the 1700s and 1800s. Good for them.
Yeah, well,
and look, it was before herpes and AIDS and all that stuff. You know what, Amy? We are out of time. I'm telling you, every time I have you on the air, the time just flies. But stay tuned because I've got the one and only Don Was coming up. In the next hour. Yeah, in addition to the magnificent music he's made and produced over the years, he just did this new video, a new rendition of Stand By Me with an Iranian pop star. And it's meant as showing the Iranians that we are standing with them in their trials right now. So, Amy Simon, CheeriosInMyUnderwear.com. And we'll talk soon. And stand by, Don Was coming up next.